This is Pet Life Radio. Let's talk pets.
We are live here on Pet Life Radio and Instagram. Here for you, here for your pets. You know the drill. So I'm sitting here waving everybody. Hello, Kelly. Of course, it's free. So we want your questions. We want to help you out with anything you need to be helped out with as far as your pets. And a couple of things I'll talk about also, because I always have something to talk about. But want to wait till we get a few more people on, and then we will get going. So anyway, here to reach us on Pet Life Radio, you just have to go on to Pet Life Radio and just click on the link and you're joining us live. Hello, Steph. And here, you know the drill. You just have to type away like you're at. So anyway, a couple of things. It was an interesting week for me. I remember last week I was away. I was at the business group on health conference, which was great. And this week was a crazy, crazy busy week. We had two splenectomies. By that, I mean tumors that we knew of the spleen. They were both bleeding into the abdomen. Hello, Deb. And Katie P will get that in a minute. So I would say usually we know that when there's a splenic mass and there's bleeding in the belly, first of all, blood in the abdomen is 100%. You got to go in and take a look, okay? Because we just don't know exactly what is going to be involved. But we know with bleeding, you got to stop the bleeding. And there's only one way to do that, and that's go in. So interestingly, I would say a vast majority, maybe 60, 70% of these splenic tumors are just spleen. We go in, we remove the spleen, we inspect the abdomen, and as I said, the majority of them, this is the first step, and it is curative because, well, unless the splenic mass was not a tumor. It was either hemangioma, which is a benign splenic tumor, or a splenic hematoma, which is like a big blood blister like we get in ears in dogs. But 70% of them are hemangiosarcoma, which is a tumor. So the issue there is that removing the spleen will give us that temporary thrill of defeat, like we beat it. Okay, we beat the tumor, I should say. But we know that with hemangiosarcoma, there's a high potential for metastases, and within months, it's going to spread to the liver, the lungs, and it's going to be a bad prognosis. The two I did last, which are two of this week, both open up the abdomen looking to remove the spleen. We look at the spleen. The first one, you didn't even need to look. The tumor was everywhere. When we pulled out the spleen, part of the liver came with it. Part of the intestines came with it. It was literally, you couldn't even resect anything. And that was such a drag. The owners wanted to be there, so we just basically closed the dog right up, recovered from anesthesia, and we said goodbye right there. I mean, they just wanted to say goodbye. It's very sad when that happens. Other one was just Friday, and what happened there, it was, again, bleeding abdomen, the dog was weak, lift up the lips, the gums are pale. I mean, it's you could just tell. You could tell there's blood in there. You stick a needle into a pocket, we go on the ultrasound, I could see the actual splenic tumor. I could see, we talked to the owners, they wanted to maybe wait a day. This was Thursday, by the way. They wanted today. We didn't think it was a good idea, but yeah, because we don't know what happened. Dog could have bled out overnight. Anyway, at late afternoon Thursday, they gave us the green light. So we go in, they have the family there, open up, splenic mass, see the spleen. And as we're basically in the process of cutting off the vessels, ligating them to remove the spleen, we have all the splenic vessels under control. We can see it. There's no more blood coming from the spleen, but yet the belly was still, you could tell, fresh blood. Oh, God, not one of those. So we go in, we have a suction unit, we suction out the blood, and you can see the liver, parts of the liver, like many areas, big tumors that are continually bleeding as well. And that's just that's where it gets tough. So we told them, I went out in the middle of surgery, told them what was going on, showed them pictures of what we got. One of my technicians was taking pictures of the surgery. And they said, no, they definitely will not want to put him to sleep, but is there any way we can wake him up? Because I don't think they were emotionally prepared to say goodbye. And that is really critical. It really is. And now what I usually do with these splenic tumors is I will put the IV catheter in, get the animal ready for surgery, then put them in a room with their owners and let them spend time. And because I tell them, we may be in a situation where we may have to put this dog to sleep on the table. And so that's kind of my thing that I've been doing for a long time. They still wanted to spend the night. They had a son that was coming in. Anyway, we did. We closed the dog up, removed the spleen, closed the dog up, let them know that this is. And then the dog, amazingly, woke up from anesthesia, was sitting up, but they knew that short-lived. There's no way to stop the bleeding. So anyway, bottom line is we said goodbye. It was just so depressing for me because, I mean, 2 in 1 week, we're give them time. If it's a splenic hemangiosarcoma, we know that ultimately we're going to say goodbye, but it would have been nice for them to spend more time. Okay. How concerned should I be for lepto? So hold on a second. Let me go to the beginning one. All right. Good morning. I have a question. First time in 36 years at a coyote visit. Stayed for 10 minutes, scented up my artificial turf. Dogs went out 5 hours later and sniffed like crazy. All right. Now, the question is the likelihood of this coyote shedding lepto is there. It is there. And we know lepto is spread via feces and urine of dogs that are, or animals that are carrying it. And that's why when, if you frequent hiking, you go into the mountains, you go into the canyons, and your dog is running off leash and running around, I would 100% recommend lepto. In the neighborhood, now that we're seeing more and more coyotes and other wild rodents, in our neighborhood, we have raccoons, we have skunks. Could they be carrying lepto? I guess they can. So if you have dogs that are sniffing, one of my dogs, my Frenchie, is a pain in the behind, and he's doing it all the time. He sniffs everything. I mean, he'll even sniff. One of my dogs, I have five. One cannot go to the bathroom, take a pee, and not have my Frenchie go back to that spot and pee right on top of it. He's got to be the boss. He's that, you know, he's the, that Tarzan. He wants to be the boss. So I don't. It wouldn't hurt to do lepto. However, I always tell people of all the vaccines that seem to leave like a vaccine pain reaction, lepto seems to be the top. So be prepared for a little bit of a discomfort after the shot. But as far as the since lepto is a serious disease and it could cause some problems with your dog, especially with kidneys, I would say in a situation like that where you can see the dog's the potential interaction with this coyote urine and your dogs, it probably would be wise to give the lepto. So let's see. There was another question. All right. Not necessarily a medical question. All right. Pet home versus working home. I have a foster dog. I'm faced with the choice of placing him in a pet home or working a home for a, or working a home for a pet talent agency. I am not getting this. So it's a pet home versus a working home. So now, placing him at a pet home or a working home for a pet talent agency. So I'm not familiar with these, the working home. Is it like a boarding facility where these, like an agency keeps pets specifically for some sort of TV or movie work? Then, look, my feeling is this. Is a pet home probably the best? I would think so. But as long if the only other option is back to a shelter or what you call this working home, and the dog is going to get attention, the dog is going to have playful interaction with other dogs or whoever is monitoring them at this working home, and they're getting well fed and they're being cared for, then that's better than a shelter for sure. Is it as good as a real family pet home? You know, it's a tough one. I'll tell you this. I was working with one of the big food companies named to be withheld. And they, of course, testing their foods and testing the health benefits of these foods on the pets that they're working with. So I went into one of these facilities that had cat rooms. And they keep the cats for anywhere from 12 to 18. They are multiple cats in a room. Their playing, their interaction is unbelievable. The cleanliness is top-notch. The human interaction, every day they get this. And at the end of their testing, where they monitor their bloods and their GI tracts, they want to see how their food is doing, which again, that's really good for those people that are going to buy and feed that food, that they have this data. But 100% adoptions. 100%. There's not a single one of these kittens and cats that ever gets put to sleep or taken to a shelter. So I look at that and say, you know, it was they were being used in a sense, during this using, which all that meant is monitoring stool, monitoring blood, they were, you'd want to move into this. Your own cat at home does not have it like these cats had it, as far as the mental stimulation, as far as the human contact, obviously the good food, it's unbelievable. And the play, oh my God, the obstacle courses, you're running around. I took video of it. It was amazing. So if that's the situation this working home is, and then ultimately when they're done working, they get placed, then that's not so bad. I'd love to hear your comments about it, but unless you've seen it as I did, you really can't tell. But just by, you know, again, but they, were they being used? Are they like they're mice and they're being tested and they're sitting in cages? No. This is not a cage. This is a room the size of a dining room, a living room, and there's everywhere you look, there's something for them to do and play and the interaction. It really is. I was jealous. I would have taken one of those cats. And that's how cool they were. All right. Okay. Let's see. JB, how you doing? Thank you, Kelly. I don't know if you've been in touch with anybody in the fam, Beth or Clifford, but everyone's doing well. Okay. Should I give in about, you know, that's a good question. How long ago was this interaction, Ivy Blue Eyed? I mean, we're not sure there was even any really interaction. Did your dog lick up their urine? I mean, just playing with it. Could you do a course of antibiotics? I guess you could. You would do a full course though. The worst thing you ever want to do is do like half-assed antibiotic. You don't want to start it for a couple of days, then find out, oh, you know what? That test came back. There was really not an infection anyway. No, you want to finish the course, at least a course, whether it's 7 days, minimum 10 days, maybe even better. And the reason for that is that we don't want to create resistant bugs. So if there was another type of organism there and we only got it partway, so the ones that weren't killed from the antibiotics, those organisms, they're the ones reproducing. So they're basically reproducing a new breed, a new strength of resistance. So that means whatever it was, next time if they seem to infect an animal again, it's going to take even more or a different antibiotic. So we always say, at least finish the course that you're starting now. The vaccine will be too late. Well, it all depends. There are some vaccines which you can give. Remember, lepto is also, it's a bacterial infection. It's not a virus. So like rabies, for example, rabies vaccine, you can give after the potential exposure, and because it's a slow disease. So, but we could talk about it. If the dog's acting fine, I mean, there was a big lepto scare in Santa Monica a number of years ago, and everybody was coming in for lepto vaccines, most of which did not need it. So, you know, there's a lot of assumptions here. So all I said, if you wanted to do the course of antibiotics, just do a course, and that would be okay. Okay. So anyway, we have 4 amazing fur babies, one of which is a baby, a 2-year-old American bully, suffers from hot spots so bad that it sometimes causes skin tears. I'm bathing her with oatmeal. Shampoo recommendations. So, with antibiotics, I mean, with allergies, bad skin, especially this time of year, allergy is highly a problem. However, if you just treat the allergy, but you don't treat the problems associated with that allergy right now, which are probably all the skin disease, then you're only kind of doing it halfway. So all too often, I'll talk about with a client medication for allergy, whether it's going to be the good old-fashioned steroid, whether it's going to be Apoquil, whether it's going to be Cytopoint, whatever, and Atopica. And they say, oh, no, we've tried that before and it didn't work. Well, I'm not so sure it didn't work. If there was secondary problem was not taken care of also, like infection, secondary bacterial infection. In fact, usually pyoderma in dogs, which is secondary bacterial infection, or I said bacterial infection, which is often secondary. You could have a primary pyoderma, but it's not as common as secondary pyoderma. And that means is the primary problem is something other. It could be an injury, a scratch that broke the skin. It could be allergy that inflamed skin. And all those things decrease the ability of the skin itself to perform that barrier against the bacteria. And the bacteria, most of the bacteria that we see in these lesions is Staph pseudoepidermidis, which is the normal bacterium that lives on skin. It's a happy coexisting bacteria. So why all of a sudden Is that same bacteria causing a problem? Because the skin defenses have been affected, either through inflammation, i.e. allergy, from physical scratching, either allergy or an injury or a scratch or something. So the issue is you need to take care of both. So it's always good to make sure that the bacterial infection and the allergy. Now, what about if it's not helping? You also have to think of fungal infections. So we see a lot of fungal infections in dogs, and it very well could, and those take, by the way, those are really tough to treat. Yeah, I mean, for that fungal lesions of the skin, I usually send home a month of a time, whether it's ketoconazole or fluconazole, itraconazole, but you often need 2 or even 3 months of treatment. I have sent difficult cases to dermatology, to a board certified dermatologist, and they come back with the same diagnosis, but long-term medication for fungal, antifungal medication. So that also just could be one of the issues. So you got to, keep that in mind as well. So, and then bathing. I'm a big fan of the bathing. Now, you're using an oatmeal shampoo. I have no problem with oatmeal shampoo. However, because we're dealing with skin problems that are probably secondary infection, and the infection could be either bacterial or yeast, that's why I made my shampoo called What Itch. And it is it's antibacterial, antifungal, and a good cleansing shampoo. So the reason I have it that way is because I use ketoconazole, right? I use chlorhexidine. The goal being that you want to lather them up, but here's the key also. This is often not done properly, and it has some sort of skin infection, be it fungal, be it bacterial, often a combination of both. You lather the dog up, you rinse them off, and you think, well, doc, it's not working. Of course it's not working. Imagine having that little sore on your skin and you want to put like a Neosporin. So you rub the Neosporin on and then a second later you wipe it off. How long is it going to help? No, it's not going to help. Same thing with bathing a dog with medicated shampoo. You need to lather them up and they need to sit there, lather it up for a minimum 10 minutes. I usually like 15. And just let them sit there, let them walk around. They can stick them back, whatever you're going to do. You leave them in the tub. However you're bathing them, it needs to sit there for a minimum of 10 minutes. 15 is even better. And then you do the rinse off. So a lot of times the problem is not what we're using, it's how we're using it. And if you're not using it correctly, of course it's not going to work. All right. So I would, in addition to the oatmeal shampoo, which by the way, I like oatmeal shampoo. Oatmeal shampoo. It really is. It's something that we is like we're anthropomorphizing. Oh God, that would be so good because it's natural. It's healthy. It's I can see it working well and give natural amino acids to the skin. But is it really antibacterial? No. Is it antifungal? No. What are you bathing for? Just dry skin? If it's just dry skin, I can give you even better shampoos and oatmeal. So the thing is, you need to really work on the correct shampoo for your dog. All right. We are, because of skin issues, it was treated with 30 days, antibiotics and steroid shot. That is pretty normal. 30 days of antibiotic, if it was just truly bacterial, then that may be more than you needed. It's hard to tell. If it's chronic and going on a long time, yes, you need to do it for a long time. And steroid shot. Now, steroid shots, I still use them. Well, first of all, on a dog, I should go backwards. I'll tell you what, Kelly, we're going to wait until after the commercial break because I'm getting dirty looks from Mark, our producer. Let me get the commercials in here. We will come back and we'll talk about this. Don't go away.
Take a bite out of your competition. Advertise your business with an ad in Pet Life Radio podcasts and radio shows. There is no other pet-related media that is as large and reaches more pet parents and pet lovers than Pet Life Radio. With over 7 million monthly listeners, Pet Life Radio podcasts are available on all major podcast platforms. And our live radio stream goes out to over 250 million subscribers on iHeartRadio, Odyssey, TuneIn, and other streaming apps. For more information on how you can advertise on the number one pet podcast and radio network, visit PetLifeRadio.com/advertise today.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
All oh, we're back. So, and I'm just talking about steroid injections. So in dogs, I'm not a fan of steroid injections. We do use dexamethasone for acute allergic reactions. When we do a test, for example, a low-dose dex suppression test, we use that injection. When we have an animal come in with an acute allergic reaction, urticaria, hives, we use dexamethasone. But as far as longer-acting steroids, the real long-acting one called triamcinolone was either Kenalog or Betalog. I do not use those in dogs except for intralesional injections for things like lick granulomas, which we don't see very often. Now, in cats, I will use methylprednisone a lot. That lasts about 4 weeks. And cats can tolerate steroids way better than dogs can. In dogs, if they're exposed to too much corticosteroid without a break, then we can suppress the adrenal glands. And we don't want to do that. And which is why when we use oral steroids like prednisolone for a cat and prednisone for a dog, we like to take breaks. So I will use, like, I'll do what's called a 3-day decreasing dose if it's really bad, or severe otitis decreasing dose, which means I'll go 5 days twice a day. That's it. Then I go to 5 days just once a day. And then after that, every other day to every third day, you keep decreasing the dose. When you use an injection, especially a long-acting injection, you can't pull it out. And therefore, I'm not a fan of steroid shots in dogs unless it's for a testing purpose and it's very rapid acting, an acute allergic reaction, which is only good for about maybe a day, or for intralesional injections for things like lick granulomas. Cats, however, I can use steroids. They don't have the same issue. You can use a methylpred shot. I don't do it. I don't repeat them very often, like maybe a second one. After that, I may go to oral for the same reasons, but they tolerate them better. It's election time in LA. Compared with shelters and animals held by homeless people in Skid Row. No current state employees are doing anything. Well, it's a excellent statement, and it's a sad thing. It really is. I have one of my colleagues, Dr. Quan Stewart, is the street vet. I'm sure you've seen him. He's been all over the media. And he does that. He walks around downtown LA. He gives shots to these dogs. He treats these dogs with problems, all on money free to the pet parent. And he gets donations all over the place. He's very well known. He throws in his own money at times. And the goal is to help these animals. And I wish there were a better solution. I mean, hell, we're having a tough solution here in LA just for the homeless, let alone their dogs. So, unfortunately, it is not seen as such a problem. I disagree, of course, but it is. And it's not just their dogs. It's them as well. And I don't know the answer. Apparently they have all these shelters for the people and they're not being used. And I don't know much about why. I don't know what the issues are, but okay. Eloise, how you doing? Lots of questions. Well, appreciate your insight to question. I intend to meet with both applicants. The pet home happened to be the first time dog owners. I think a CPA would be this. Yeah. Really. That would be a time. It all depends. If you're going to go visit them, find out what type of location, how are they kept? How are they stimulated? How much visitation? How much playtime? How much, what foods? Get some detail. Is it going to be as one-on-one as a pet home? Probably not. But would it be pretty cool and they are taken care of in a really great way? Then, maybe not so bad. But certainly better than a shelter, that I'll tell you. My shampoo, you can get it online. It might be tough. Because it has ketoconazole and Amazon has this kick, I don't know why they can't use. Send me a text to Dr. Jeff at Dr. Jeff. And I don't know if you live in LA, I have it in my office. Otherwise, we can ship it out to you. It's called What Itch, and it's really good. Clients really like it. So, yeah, as I said, I don't know where you're calling from, Jeannie, but I have it. I have it in my office. Okay, let me see what it says here. The working home is just as you said; they will continue training for purposes of filming and TV. Yeah, I mean, if they keep them, if it's a really nice environment and it's very enriching. And animal enrichment is very, very, very important to our pets, then, yeah, that might not be so bad. Why would a 14-week-old puppy have to have anal glands expressed? Well, if it's the first time, you know, first of all, expressing anal glands, a lot of factors. Number one is just the rectal muscles that when at the end of a bowel movement, they little give the anal muscles a little squeeze, and that expresses the glands. Secondly is the glands themselves. What is the secretion like? Is it super thick? If it's super thick, then it just could be that's the issue. And it just can't get out. So they need to be expressed. I guess the real question is over time, and then what you can do, might be able to do to add something to the food that might soften up the secretion. So every Sunday morning, my son with his three boys lives right around the corner. I go over there for breakfast. And Brandon, who is our co-founder at AirVet, he's actually CEO. He's the brains behind AirVet. I'm just the veterinary officer. Anyway, he has a big, like a barista coffee machine, a barista, whatever you want to call it, you know, potato, potato, and tomato, tomato. So anyway, he makes the most amazing coffee. So have a nice iced coffee. It's the best. Mm. So Werbs, Dermamist, that's good. Dermamist is good also. So that's a spray. And the Dermamist is a really cool spray, and it has the same ingredients. It's almost like after you bathe with What Itch, now you can use the spray to, you know, sort of keep them protected against the fungal and the bacterial infections. All right, send for you. All right, here we go. Eloise, notice my dog shaking his legs when he poops or is standing for a long period. It's time to give Librela. So this may not be pain. It could be just muscular fasciculations. Okay, and the legs that they can sit in a certain position for a while can actually, the muscles get a little tired. And it's not a problem. It's not a dangerous thing. I'm just saying I'm not so sure Librela is going to be the answer. How old is the dog too? Because it could be related to this age. As they get age, I mean, when they're standing for a long period of time, their muscles will actually just, you know, get tired. So you get these little twitches, little fasciculations in the muscle, and it may not be a problem. Now, would it hurt to try an injection of Librela? I mean, for my old Labrador, soon to be 15, he was really having trouble. And I'm thinking to myself, he's a 15-year-old lab or 14 and three-quarter-year-old lab. They get tired. A lot of them don't live to that age anyway. So what am I crazy about? I said, look, I don't know if it's pain or just muscle weakness. All right. So, I figured, let me try it. I'll try a Librela. Sure enough, it wasn't magical, like he started running around the block again, but he certainly was able to get up and down those stairs much more freely and easily than before I gave the shot. So that just says, I know the joints and the muscles have a lot to do with it as well, not necessarily pain, but I'm sure there is some joint pain. I'm probably has, like any old person has a certain degree of arthritis. Librela is perfect for arthritis pain. So anyway, I thought that wouldn't be a bad thing. Anyway, I was impressed. It worked for him. So waving it just then. Okay. Dog has bad breath. Can't breath and can't afford. You can't brush his teeth. Can't afford to get dentals or anything. Oh boy. All right. First of all, very common. It usually is an oral problem. Now the mouth should be checked as best it can, because if it's a rotten tooth, then you're going to have to do something. The water additives aren't going to help. There are a number of water additives that you can use, that you put whatever it is into the, one of the ones I have at the office right now, and you add it to the water, to the drinking water. Some you can actually put into a spray and just apply it to the mouth itself directly. So there are ways to cover the smell. It's not a solution to the smell. I mean, the smell is going to be there. You're just covering it up for your own purposes. The best way is to, now I have a way of brushing teeth. And I've showed you, from, you know, when you go not at them, but you go from behind and start doing that, they seem to tolerate that pretty well. Even just getting a toothpaste on will help with the smell a little bit. But obviously the best way to do it is get a thorough dental, a deep dental, getting under the gums, cleaning the teeth, making sure there are no rotten teeth, making sure there are no mobile teeth, because if there are, you pull them and you do it. I've done dentistries on 17-year-old dogs. I mean, age is not a disease. You still, for any old dog, you want to get annual blood tests or even twice a year. So do the lab work. And if everything comes back fine, and the heart is fine, and fine, then you risk it. Otherwise, you do whatever these water additives, these the things you can put in the mouth just to help you deal with the smell. It covers it. It's not removing it. And then you just live with it. Because if you truly can't, then, do a dentistry for, let's say, severe heart disease. The liver is terrible. The kidneys are terrible. You have them on fluids and you just don't want to anesthetize the dog. Then, by the way, kidneys, there is something called uremic breath. And a lot of these dogs that have really awful breath, it's because the kidney disease. So I don't know when the last time we did a blood test, but that would be something to evaluate, because if the kidneys are really bad, and so we have what was called that we can fix. Well, can't fix it, but we can at least help by working on the kidneys. So at least we know what the problem is. And if the teeth look pretty good, I mean, when you just look at them and the tartar is not that bad and there are no loose teeth and you don't see anything rotting in the mouth, then maybe it's uremic breath. All right, Patty, hello. FYI, Carson Shelter has 3 Frenchies available. All right, so for those of you that are Frenchie enthusiasts, yeah, Carson Shelter has 3 Frenchies. So if you want to save a life and get a Frenchie, then get one. I know a good Frenchie doc, by the way. Just kidding. I see a lot of Frenchies. All right. Okay. Like Corgi. Yeah, the Dermapiss, I'm telling you, I love the Dermapiss. Okay. I'm so bossy. Are you really? All right. Thank you. Oh, you're in Pembroke, Florida. Well, if we have to, we can send it out. Go to Dr. Jeff at drjeff.com. Give me all your information. I'll have my sister, Jill, who runs the shipping, and we can send something out to you. All right. Yeah. I mean, little chihuahuas, so a lot of these dogs like this, will get, these anal glands will fill up pretty quickly. And you just, like I said, you get into a routine. You do it once a month. Probably, I mean, if you want to learn, Kelly, it's not that hard, but you can do it yourself. I don't always recommend it because it's the grossest thing ever, but I've been doing this for 40 plus years. And have I ever gotten anal secretion in my face? Yeah. And is it the worst thing ever? Yeah. But when I'm sitting there and I'm expressing the anal glands, I'm not behind it. I'm almost in the front of the dog like this, because I don't want that stuff in my face. And I've been there. All right. Sebaceous cyst, he has 2. You can't really prevent them. The only way to stop one that's there already from coming back is you need to remove the cyst in its entirety. Why? Because there are cells in the wall of that cyst, and they're creating that thick, disgusting sebaceous material. Now, you take a big needle, you stick it in there and squeeze it like a big pimple, and you empty it. Ah, that's great. Guess what? A month or 2 or 3 later, it's back. You did nothing to disrupt and kill the cells in the wall of that cyst. It's just going to fill up again, which they usually do. Now, I have clients that come in regularly, not daily, but once every few months, and we just we squeeze them again and drain them, and they're good with that. It's easy. We know it's not tumors, so that makes it, at least you have peace of mind there. But the only way to really get rid of it, if it's just a big one that's really causing a problem, you got to actually core the entire cyst out in its entirety. In the wall, you're getting all the cells, and that will solve the problem for that cyst. That doesn't solve the other ones. So if you have multiple ones, you just know it is what it is. All right. One of Scoot, so we had 5 dogs, Dr. Jeff, office, and that expression, and they were all empty. So it's just sometimes you get some itchy, you can express anal glands, or you can try and they're empty, but the dogs are still scooting. That's just easily could be just a skin problem. At play situation, they both seem to be helping our statement. Good. Librela is. I'm becoming more and more of a fan, even though it's getting beat up online on the internet. I don't see it. We've used a lot of Librela. I have only one time. I think I mentioned this one time. After the 4th shot, the dog was about under the weather for a few days and it went away. So there's no proof that it was because of Librela. Because old dogs, who needs Librela? Which kind of dogs are having arthritic pain? It's usually older dogs. Well, with older dogs, it could be a million things that are causing the problem. So you can't say, oh my God, it was a Librela. And anyway, so far I've been lucky with my dog. All right. Sandy waving. a good water. Oh, for teeth. I would imagine that's for teeth. Yeah, good. I figured that. There's one. I'd have to look it up. We have one. If you look, there's comments in a blue container. It's clear, a clear, bluish clear liquid, and look it up. And it just say water additive for dogs, and you're going to see, like, on Amazon for mouth, for teeth or whatever, you'll just see a ton of them. They're all pretty much the same. Okay. And then there was a question I'm getting a lot of good questions. We need help with cars and shelter. Okay, that's good. Mushroom shoes. The more natural it is, in my opinion, and I'm coming from a Western trained, Western medicine, the less effective. Now, however, having said that, I have some friends of mine, doctors that are holistic docs, and have done miraculous things. Also, when it comes to IVDD, things like that, acupuncture, miraculous. So I'm not going to say it doesn't work. I'm going to say I don't recommend it because I don't know it. I've never used it. It's not my area of practice. But if you wanted to try it, I can tell you one thing, they never hurt. So if you want to give it a shot, give it a shot. You're not going to hurt anything. It may not help. So as long as you go into it with that open mind, go for it. Go for it. There's no downside. No, I did not yet. And I will take a look and see. Signs of kidney issues. Usually with kidney issues, it's going to be the first thing, drinking a lot of water, urinating a lot. As they get worse, sometimes trying to urinate and nothing comes out. They're becoming anuric. Bad breath. Uremic breath, that's another problem. And, fortunately, I mean, when we see water drinking excessively and the pee is always coming out clear, the kidneys are failing in their job. And that is to read the body's need for fluid, keeping what the body needs and only urinating out the excess. With kidney disease, everything's going in and it's all coming out. Kidneys aren't doing their job. Any of those diseases where there's excessive water drinking, excessive peeing, Cushing's disease, diabetes, you got to start with a blood test and your analysis anyway. So you'll get your answer. For all of those things, you'll get a clue where to go next. The only one that will really make an accurate diagnosis of a problem is going to be for diabetes. You're going to have huge amounts of sugar in the blood, okay, and sugar in the urine. And for kidney disease, you'll see a high BUN, high creatinine, high phosphorus, and dilute urine. And for Cushing's disease, all you're going to get is a high alkaline phosphatase. There's a second test for that. And then also there's diabetes insipidus, that's water drinking diabetes, where the everything's working fine, but except from the brain, it's not telling the body, the thirst center, when to stop. So they keep drinking and drinking and peeing and peeing. And then you have other conditions where you're going to have excessive water. There's something in puppies we see, okay, where they just like to drink water, and it's polydipsia. It's all in the brain, so they'll go to water bowl and drink. You do tests, everything is perfect. They just want to drink. So for those dogs, okay, then we will have you maybe start withholding water in the evening. Just take it away. And then you'll see they'll concentrate, everything will be fine. And they just need a stop button in their brain, in their own head, to stop drinking water. All right. We are getting a lot of questions. You guys are fantastic. And I'm so running out of time. Mark, is this okay? Okay. So, bought Taz and Hereditary Life versus IVDDs, and it goes on red light therapy. Again, I would say that I have had luck with laser light therapy. This particular one, I have not tried, but it wouldn't surprise me. There is some direct ability to decrease inflammation, maybe minimize the pain because of decreased inflammation. So again, it's natural. Would I say don't do it? No. Is it harmful? No. So go for it. Just be careful. Wear glasses. They usually come with safety glasses. You do not want to look that red light in the eye. All right. Recently, your dog's urine is yellow. They're not drinking enough. Is that true? Well, I mean, certainly, it's not about not drinking enough. Urine is going to be yellow. The question is, how concentrated is the urine? If the urine is really, really concentrated, usually it's the other way around. Usually they're drinking a lot and the urine is getting more dilute. If their urine is really concentrated, like cats, for example, then they just need to drink more water. And a lot of animals don't like drinking water. So then everything, all the tests could come fine, but the specific gravity goes up to above 1055 or 1060. Okay. And that means they just need more water. So for a cat, for example, they don't usually aren't water drinkers. My cats are, which is great. Then I'd say add more water to their food. If you're going to give them a can, whatever it is, just mix a little more water, get them to drink more water. Some people say carefully add maybe a little tad of salt, all right, to the food, so they'll be thirsty and they'll drink more water. So, but as long as everything else is normal, then they're probably not drinking a lot of water. All right. Terry Jacobs. Hello, Terry. Okay. Canine caviar, which is alkaline-based, that helps with skin issues. Again, one of those things we could try. Open farm beef, ancient. Okay. Let's see what we got here. All right. So that is it. The only one I missed is the epilepsy. We're just going to put that on the list for next week. I'm going to open up. Please, first thing that you can, go ahead and send me that question again, because it's a good one. It's a very good one, because I've had a couple of seizing dogs. Let's talk about epilepsy. Let's talk about other reasons for seizures and what we can do about it and how to diagnose them. All right. So I'm going to put that on my list for number one thing we'll talk about next week. Have a great week, everybody. And we'll see you next week. This Wednesday, we're doing some stuff with Mike O'Hearn again. So hopefully you'll look for that. And we'll see you next week. Take care. Bye-bye.
Let's Talk Pets every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.